Hello, hello, hello. This is the Hamilton Outdoors Podcast. Finally cracking out the first episode. We've got Terry Jones here. Terry, what do you do for a living, man?
I am a refrigeration technician.
What is that?
I do work on all your big major grocery store outlets, Sam's Club, Walmart's.
So like freezer units and stuff like that?
All of it, yeah. Oh, nice. All the cases and all the walk-ins, and we install all that, and at the end of it, I get it up and running and make sure everything's going smooth.
Okay, so do you you travel a lot for that?
Yes. Yeah.
How many days a week do you think you're gone?
I typically 4 to 5 days a week, and then if I'm like 4 states over from where I live, it may go a couple weeks out.
So that gets a little tricky during hunting season, huh?
Very tricky.
Yeah. So what do you do for like your time management when it comes to that?
Well, I get a 3 weeks vacation. Mm-hmm. So it's what I do is I reserve all of my vacation time for the fall hunting season.
Okay. What about like, how's it cut into like your scouting time? Because, you know, you're taking vacation off for hunting season. So with your scouting time, things of that nature, how do you get time to actually get out there and try to find signs in places that, you know, maybe you've never hunted before, things that you've, you know, different areas you've never seen that you want to try out? How do you find time for that?
Well, it's what I typically do is during my hunting season, whether it be an off day or a bad day, whether you got people coming in on you or something spooked the deer or you blow it up going in and jump them up, typically it's what I do is use that time to do my scouting.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's a good thing. It's like it's hard, you know, guys like us, you know, that's why this podcast was put out. Guys like us that don't have, you know, the same amount of time as somebody who like is in the industry and hunts, you know, damn near every fucking day of, you know, of the season and 100 different, you know, different places and things of that nature. So, yeah, that's good. Like my big thing is like when it comes time to scouting, the only time you really have is in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're doing your summer scouting, you try to do your late season scouting after the season's over. But in the summertime, it's 90 to 100 degrees outside. Who the hell wants to go out,
right,
and, you know, wants to scout? Yeah. So it gets tricky. And that's the thing. Like you hear a lot of people say, well, you know, we're running trail cameras all the time. And we're, you know, we're running the cell cams and we're doing this and we're doing that. But in reality, number one, I very rarely run cameras. If I run cameras, they're not cell cams. Excuse me, I'm burping. I like it. But I very rarely run them. I don't know about you. Do you run your cams? Or
no, I do not run any cameras because I hunt state grounds, public grounds.
It's a good way for shit to get taken.
Yeah, I don't leave nothing in the woods. If I set a strap-on stand out there, it's got a 3/8 chain around it.
You said strap-on.
You never know when you need one.
That's right. So let's see. So, okay. So if let's say, I'm going to put you in a scenario here. In fact, I know you ran into the scenario recently. So you've hunted the same area for several years and you've always been very productive out of the area that you hunt. I'm going to put you in a scenario like last season that you ran into where you had the perfect setup. You had a good spot. And then all of a sudden, you know, opening weekend, here come everybody.
Yep.
Walking through. So what's that do? Like what?
Well, it's what I do is, first of all, when I show up to a spot, I'm first seeing if it looks like the surrounding areas, whether there's lots of people there. If there is people hunting where I hunt, I educate them on where I'm going or where I might let them think that I'm going so that they won't lay a big scent trail on what I think may be a good movement trail for my hunt.
Right.
And then try to be the first one out there to have an observation point and see what happens when they hit the woods, because it can be a yay or nay once people come in, and sometimes it just gets blowed out and it's a game over after that.
Right. So then that's basically when you're trying in the middle of the season to scout a new area out.
Right.
And then that comes into something that I always like to say, like, that's kind of my, when I'm scouting a new area, I always look at it as, you have to go find your bedding areas. You have to go find your trails. You have to go find a food source. You have to find water. Some sayings that I use for myself is, because a lot of people are scared to, you know, kick out deer when they're scouting an area. You got to bump deer to kill deer, mm-hmm. because you have to know where they're at.
I agree.
So when it comes to that, let's go with, let's see, last year you kind of ran into another scenario with, with you and I, when we went out and, to the location that we hunt here in Indiana, where we didn't really do much scouting on the property. And, I think it was you, who was that? You, Leanne, and myself all went out and, ended up getting rained on. And then I had to go get my dog so he could track that doe. But that was an area we never really scouted. I mean, we squirrel hunted a little bit, but we never scouted it. But we just took our knowledge from the squirrel hunting that we did over there. And then, you know, looking at the maps and things of that nature, trying to find, you know, where's a key point between the bedding and the food supply. Right. So, with that, I mean, that's a tricky game, especially, you know, mid-season, have to change it up because somebody comes in and bust up your set, and which is really, you know, you can get mad about it, or you can just shrug it off and just find another spot. I mean, this public ground, it sucks, but it's just like part of it. Either you go deeper or find another section, you know.
Yeah, and that's the bad thing about it. It's like they don't have enough parking spots for the hunting spots available.
Yep.
Every spot you go to, there's vehicles.
Yep. It's I don't know. It seems like around here it gets a lot worse during, you know, gun season.
It does. It does. It was a bad year last year, and I think that's due to all the people being off work from the plandemic. But
yeah, but that's the plandemic. That is a fact. That is a fact. I think, though, a lot of those people that were off, I think that maybe it'll probably pan out, because I'd say a good portion of them were unsuccessful.
Yes.
So I feel like it was something they feel like they wanted to do or give it a go, more or less like, oh, well, we don't have a lot of money to be able to put food on our table, although they get them big fat unemployment checks. But my thing is, I think a lot of that will start trickling off within the next year or two.
Yeah, and I'm all good with, you know, getting people and educating people out in the woods or whatever. It's when it's unplanned and you get the uneducated guys out there in your honey hole where you think you got a good spot, and then next thing you know, it's getting blowed up with footprints and scent and all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, man, it sucks. It does. We don't have a lot of access, you know, to private land. Luckily, I've got a little bit of access, you know, to what, 60 acres, but it up to, you know, a substantial amount of private land. But again, that's one of those things where I don't take does on, you know, my hunting property. I don't want to, because most of the does, you know, I know of three does out there that I've seen consecutively that have twins or triplets, you know.
Yep.
Well, not necessarily, I can't back the triplets up, but they've had several that look, you know, are all fresh. I can't physically say it's hers. We got somebody over there
building a barn.
I'm doing this podcast outdoors, so if the audio's shitty, I apologize.
I can't think of a better place to do it than the great outdoors.
Damn straight. You can hear the birds chirping. It just got done pouring down rain. Now the mosquitoes are tearing us up, but we don't really give a shit.
No, we're from Indiana. It's all we got to do is stick around for 5 minutes and it'll change.
Right, right. So what would be one of your biggest mistakes that you have learned in your, you know, lifetime hunting?
Oh, man.
That many, huh?
There's a lot of them. Yeah, oh, yeah.
So what's the one that sticks out the most? Like, damn it, I shouldn't have done that. I knew better. I wanted to, you know, try to get a different angle. I wanted to try to get closer. I wanted, you know, what?
I'd say my biggest mistake, because when you shoot an animal, you want to make sure you're 100% and not trying to...
You want an ethical kill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ethical kill. But having said that, the only difficult part about hunting where we hunt is when you, once you pull that trigger, once you release that arrow, once it's in flight, and you know that you did not get a good clean shot, but it's a lethal shot,
mm-hmm.
What do you do? Well, in reality, it'd be great to come
back.
When
in doubt, back out, right?
Yeah. When in doubt, back out. But having said that, where we're at, when in doubt, back out, there may be five people that sees your deer running with blood pumping out, and that deer won't be there.
It'll get taken.
And I've seen that many a times, people walking through the woods with radios or... a coyote, you know, so...
I had that experience.
Yeah.
This year. Twice. That one earlier you and I were talking about where I shot that doe and I had to go back and get the dog because she ran off into that big thicket and it got dark on us. But I had that, and then by the time I got back, the coyotes already had a hold of it.
Yeah.
And then we were hunting on our property that we hunt, you know, not too far from our house. And... I put a nice shot on the doe, and she jumped over, tripped on over the creek, and, you know, I waited, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes, jumped down, backed out, went down and around and picked up Cassie, and got down there, just shooting a shit with her, saying, hey, you know, we're getting ready to go. I don't think she ran far, and then all of a sudden, here she come, and she come across the creek, and... Cassie said, hey, isn't that your deer? I said, no, there's no way. I was like, I put a heller shot on her. And sure enough, the arrow was, you could see where the arrow went through, and there's a nice big blood spot right. It must have hit right in between the lungs and the heart or something. And it was a nice hole. I mean, she was dripping pretty good blood, but not, you know, 15
muscle
steps
blood,
behind.
Possibly.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it was bubbly. So I think I clipped a lung maybe, but she run over, you know, she got, was about 15 steps behind her. A damn coyote was right behind her. And her and I, you know, both of our jaws pretty much dropping like weight. I've never in my life seen that.
Yeah, I think they follow us in the woods and set like 100 yards from us and just wait.
100%. And so we've got that. And then, what about, let's see here. What have you, what's your biggest success? Like, what's your, when someone asks you about, you know, your most memorable moment, whether it be, you know, squirrel hunting, rabbit hunting, you know, what's your most, you know, obviously deer, what's your most memorable moment? Like, what, everybody has that one deer that they've killed that always just, you know, they always remember it. And, you know, what's that? What's that for you?
Well, I would have to say that my most memorable moment would be one year in particular where...
How long ago was that, you reckon?
It was around... probably 2, let's see.
Just roughly, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it's probably around 2000.
So about 20 years ago,
yeah,
21 years
2000, ago. 2000, 2005. Went hunting with some buddies down in an area where I'd never hunted, never scouted. And I had downed a nice buck that morning. And the weather was warm.
It's always a good feeling.
Yeah, yeah. I downed him pretty quick and got him back home and had him gutted, packed him full bags of ice, and went out back that evening behind where I live and shot my first doe with a bow.
Your first bow kill is always, you know, it's always something that sticks with you.
Oh, yeah.
I do, you know, would you rather stand hunt, spot and stalk? How would you rather?
I prefer stand.
Yep.
Unless I can get a potential vantage point from an elevated spot where maybe they're coming through a crossing at a river or something and I can ambush them. But the only time I really like to hunt on the ground is when I could use, when it's real windy or if it's snowing real bad. I've killed a lot of deer on the ground while it is snowing.
Oh yeah, I mean their visibility is just, you know, just as shitty as ours when it comes to that. It's one of those things where you know Mother Nature actually, you know, helps.
Yep.
Doesn't always work that way.
Yep. Walk with your face to the wind and
yep, send it.
Yep.
And I mean I kill a lot of deer that way. I'd rather get up and move around a little bit especially in a nice, you know, nice steady rain, something smooth to be able to do that.
Yeah, so, just like fishing. I love that drizzle.
Right? So, you know, I think you're about like I am. Don't get me wrong, I like killing big deer, but at the same time, I'm there to put food on the table.
Absolutely.
That said, I'm not going to pass up, you know, a 150, you know, inch deer just to put something else on the table. I mean, if it's there, I'm going to shoot
right.
It, but at the same time, I'm not going to be shy. If I see, you know, if I seen a big bodied spike, I'd shoot that son of a bitch.
Yep.
I mean, that's just, I'm there for the meat. To me, the meat's more important than the antlers. But you know, that being said, everybody's different. What's your thought process on that?
I would have to agree with you. Just because where we live at, you know, unless you got the luxury of hunting a private property and...
Yeah, but you can kill big deer on state land.
Yeah, you can. It's somewhat of a task. And I you know, have to say, if you're going to do it, you need to get it done early in the year.
Like before everybody else starts,
yes,
you know,
because,
getting crazy out there.
The army comes in when it comes gun season, and
the
it makes it that. Yeah, when that happens, they a lot of times go dormant.
Right. Well, I mean, I mean, they get a lot of pressure put on them, and you know, if you can catch them early season, you know, they don't have all that pressure. They've got adjusted to their summer schedule, you know, and it's funny because what I've noticed over the years that sometimes those deer slip up, you know, because they're not used to you. They're not used to seeing somebody around. And I mean, you can get, you know, you play the wind right and you play your spot right, and you know, you're gonna have a success on public land. I mean,
yep. Oh yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, it's nice. Sometimes, I mean, I've heard guys say, you know, hey, there's people that hunt this area like crazy, but there's a guy that goes way back deep, and there's a guy that kind of goes in the middle, and you know, a lot of people are like, hey, why not just hunt, you know, 50 yards off the road and, you know, not too far from the parking area, and let them guys, when they just go in later than them, when they're on their way out, to push a deer right to you, you know. I've never had success that way. I've never tried it personally. I don't know. Have you ever tried anything like that?
Yeah, the spot I hunt up north there, I'm
an undisclosed location, right?
Absolutely. I am approximately maybe 150 yards from the road.
Right.
But yet, adjacent to where I hunt, a lot of people hunt, and I have had a lot of deer pushed to me because of hunters coming in or out or of that effect.
Right. Which I mean, that's the game on public land. You just got to outdo the next guy, right?
Yes.
What about, let's see, if you could go back right now and talk to Terry 30 years ago, 35 years ago, about, you know, things that you've learned in the woods and things you've learned, you know, hunting or whatever, what would be the number one thing that you would tell him to succeed even more, to be able to expand his knowledge even more in the future?
Well, back when I was younger and I first started hunting, I didn't really have any mentors, and we had
how about your uncle?
Yeah, this is even before I started talking to him and getting in deep conversations with him about archery.
Uh-huh.
For probably 5 years that I started hunting, it was mainly just firearms only, and muzzleloader. At that point in time, I was farming, which required a lot of my time.
Mm-hmm.
7 days a week, I was up at 4 o'clock every day, milking 80 head of cattle in the morning, 80 head in the evening. And me and one of the guys that I worked for, he hunted also, and we took turns. Well, knowing now what I didn't know then, I had seen deer, but they smelled me before I seen them.
Right.
Because I smelled like a cow.
you think a cow would help blend you in? You
well,
know?
That's what I thought. And, you know, even hunting with a gun, their nose goes out to 100 yards if the wind's right.
Yeah. So back on that topic, what would be the number one thing you'd say to yourself?
The number one thing I'd say to myself is descent before you hit the woods.
Yep.
Clothes, everything.
Yep. And what steps do you take to do that?
Usually, I wash my clothes, scent-free soap, and I lay them out and leave them outdoors. And then for transport, I put in a tote.
Mm-hmm.
And unless I get real hot and sweaty or sweat my ass off when I go out there, whatever, if it's a warm day, I'll usually just put them back in the tote and then wash them once a week.
Wash them once a week? See, because you got some guys that don't, you know, do anything. They smoke in the woods.
Yeah.
How about you chew? Do you chew in the woods?
Yes.
You know, does that scent not affect them? Have you noticed? Or
I spit in a bottle. The big ones, I'm sure it does affect them.
Right.
But yeah, I've had deer under my tree, around me. But you know, you're talking yearlings and whatnot. I've had them put their nose in the air. Now, whether that was contributed to my breath or whatnot, I've always spit in a bottle. So, but yeah, you know, every scent is a fungus. So I wouldn't think that, with me being 20, 25 foot up in a tree, that unless the thermals were dropping like a rock at that moment in time, that they'd be able to smell it out of my mouth. But it, you know, could be a possibility if,
right,
you know, if just a slight breeze and the thermals were wrong.
Right. Makes sense. Makes complete sense. That gives me a minute to, since we're talking about scent, Hamilton Outdoors is actually getting ready to release a new scent line, called Stay Invisible. We're going to have, all sorts of stuff going on. We're going to have acorn, we're going to have dirt, we're going to have no scent, we're going to have the clothing wash, the wipes, everything. It's getting ready to release. Hopefully, we picked a projected release date about mid-August. We're sending out samples right now to some people who request some samples. And the cool thing is the names for all the scent products kind of just fit how, you know, my personality is. Like the acorn scent's going to be called Busted Nut. The dirt is going to be Down and Dirty. We're going to do a dirt and acorn scent. It's called Dirty Nuts. And the no scent's called No Stank. So we we're getting ready to release that out, and hopefully, you know, we've done countless studies on the product, and the holdup's been the bottles. With all this stupid plandemic going on, I'm stealing Terry's word. It's hard to get bottle supply. But if you guys stay tuned and tuned into the Facebook page and to the podcast, we'll keep you updated on everything that's going to be going down. Also, I got a buddy. His name's Dalton. He runs a Rack Daddy Minerals. You guys have to check that out. It's a lot of minerals for deer and stuff. You guys are going to have to definitely look into it and grow some big deer. He's got a lot of good success, and I should be talking to him on here directly, but I promised the first podcast to my buddy here. So we've been friends for a little while, and we're both into a lot of the same things. So we're gonna veer off into another topic, something Terry really, really loves, because he talks about it more than anything in the world. And no, it's not sex. we're gonna get into some fishing here in just a second. But my thing is, so everything that we've discussed in this, it is based upon somebody who has a regular job, who does that 9-to-5 grind, and who gets up every day and has to make a paycheck. None of us that are going to listen to this podcast, granted, we're going to gain information from people who kill these monster deer, these 5-year-old deer, these 7-year-old deer. We're going to gain information from them. But realistically, those guys have a lot more time than we do.
And a lot of them's close to deer farms.
Yep, and a lot of them have access to private land, and a lot of them have access to, you know, the sponsorships to go hunt these big, extravagant, you know, high fence areas. But they're not going to discuss that. You know, we don't do that. We're not here for that. And you know, granted, yeah, that's all fun and games. Sure, if you want to kill a trophy deer, but. Yeah, I mean, that's up to you. To each his own. I'm not going to knock somebody for doing it their way. So, Terry, that brings me to my next thing. Number one, what kind of fishing do you like to do? What is your choice? What is your favorite type of fishing? If somebody said, hey, you can only do this type of fishing for the rest of your life, that's it, nothing else, what would it be?
Bass fishing.
All right. Man, I thought he was going to say bluegill. He had me thrown off. So, all right, what's your choice lure?
Oh.
If you had one lure to choose out of your tackle box that is Old Faithful, what would it be?
A go-to lure. What time of the year are we talking?
Let's say it is, actually, let's go today. Let's go right now, mid-July.
I'm going with plastics.
Plastics. All right. What color?
Depending on the clarity of the water.
All right. Just rained here, so let's go with murky.
Okay. Murky, we're going a dark color.
Dark color?
The darker the water, the darker the plastic.
So what would you prefer to bass fish in? Rivers, lakes, streams?
Me personally, I'll fish anywhere where there's moving water, tails and fins. But I do a lot of my fishing in gravel pits down in southern Indiana.
Okay.
Where they have dug for coal. The pits have been dormant. There's a lot of state pits down there. And I fish on the in-between pits. So you have to look at it from a geographical map.
I like how he's not. No fisherman or hunter ever fully discloses their location, and I love it. I'm the same way. Like, I'll give somebody like an idea. And I'll say, hey, you know, over here is probably not that bad of a spot. And, you know, over there, I've never seen anything going on over there. But in reality, over there is where I killed all my deer. You know, I'm not gonna like, fill somebody in, you know.
Yeah, where I've went all my life, I don't even see people. There's no truck paths.
Right.
There's no signs. I may park.
You probably just float around the water butt-ass naked,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, I have. I have. I will park a half to three-quarter of a mile away by a state-signed pit and walk and fish the pits that are in the middle of the woods that don't have truck trails going to them.
Those are some of the best ones.
Absolutely.
You get some of the biggest fish out of those pits.
Yep.
It is so crazy because nobody touches them. And then you get out there and you pretty much throw anything you want at them and they're going to eat it.
Yeah.
You know. Man, I love the sound of those birds. Some people might find it annoying on here, but you know what?
Sounds like a whippoorwill.
I don't even know what that is. If anybody could identify that, please just shoot us a message, shoot us an email or something, and you know, heck, shoot us a message on the Hamilton Outdoors page on Facebook. Let us know what the heck that thing is, because I have no clue. I'm not a bird expert, and you know, Cassie's grandma is probably gonna kick my ass if she hears this podcast, and she's probably gonna call me and be like, well, that's a such and such, because she is a bird nut. But okay, so what are we looking for when we're out fishing for bass? Like, what kind of, you know, area do I want to fish in? I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not a big bass fisherman. I'm a crappie fisherman myself, but what are we looking for?
Big bass are kind of like deer. They like to,
Have sex,
hang out around structure. So any type of fallen tree, rocks, any moving current that might be moving bait fish around.
So basically structure.
Yes.
Yeah, any structure you can get into. Dude, I just seen a frog jump over by that tree. It literally, frog, what is that called?
Frog gig.
Frog gigging, yeah, we need to go frog gigging. You just caught, you know, you just went on a fishing trip not too long ago.
Yep.
Did you catch any bass on that trip?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yep.
Anything to speak of?
Nothing over 5 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of bluegill, a lot of big bluegill.
So bluegill, what's your technique for that?
I'd have to kill you if I told you.
Oh, come on, you can tell us.
Well, my technique is a very ultralight rod, an ultralight reel.
Now, why did you want an ultralight?
Very flimsy, very sensitive. Because crappie, bluegill, your panfish have thin lips, makes setting the hook easier.
So wait, you don't want to rip the lip?
Just
set the hook like a big old bass or catfish?
You want to hurt their lips, not rip them.
No. You want to stick them.
Yeah, I make my own bobbers.
If anybody wants access to some of Terry's bobbers, let me know. I will make sure he makes you some and sells them to you.
I will make some.
His bobbers are definitely pretty cool. I've never seen any in stores like what he uses. And I think that contributes to a lot of his success when it comes to bluegill, for sure.
Yeah, I've been bluegill fishing all my life, and my nickname growing up was bluegill.
Well, hey, you know you got to be good then. You know, I have to get in some bluegill fishing tournaments or something.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they have them. I'm sure they have to. I mean, they got crappie
fishing tournaments. I've seen a lot of big bluegill tournaments.
What did you smack yourself for?
It's a mosquito.
Damn mosquitoes. They
you
suck,
think we
dude.
Was outside in the great outdoors or something?
I know, right? Right after a nice fresh rain.
I know it.
They gotta have bluegill tournaments though, somewhere.
Possibly. If so, let me know. I'd be game.
Sign him up. So let's see. What are we doing for bluegill? Like, what is the secret? You know, like.
Well, the secret to bluegill fishing is
never tell anybody. What you think.
Yeah, never tell anybody your spot, and going with ultralight equipment, real thin line.
Won't that break though?
No. 4 pound test is probably as heavy. You can catch a 1 pound bluegill on 4 pound test.
What do you need thin line for?
Because it makes it extra sensitive.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, it makes that jig just float in the water. If you use a heavy line,
makes it sink.
It stays stationary. And then there again, if you're using heavier line, your bobber will not tip as quickly and efficiently as what it would if you were using a heavier rod or heavier line.
So what's your choice bait for bluegill?
My choice is bee moth.
Bee moth?
Yes.
Little white worms, right?
Yep.
Look like
yep.
Little grub.
Some people call them wax worms.
Okay, yep. They're bluegill are definitely a lot of fun to catch.
They are.
we you know, I do a lot of crappie fishing myself, and crappie fishing and bluegill are fairly similar. But there's, you know, there's a little bit different technique to it. I feel like I'm a pretty decent, you know, I'm not going to say I'm the greatest in the world, but I'm going to say I'm probably a little above average when it comes to that. What about, damn rabbits again. I wish it was rabbit season.
Right.
If it was rabbit season, when you'd hear guns going off and shit, because we would be shooting guns.
There
and were. Shooting rabbits.
I think they went one in on this.
They do. They do. One of them coyotes back here gets a hold of it. They will get in on mm-hmm. it. But anyway, okay, so we've talked about the fishing. We've talked about the hunting. If somebody said, hey, Terry, you have to do one or the other. You can't do them both. What are you going to do?
Hunting or fishing?
Yep.
Oh, man.
That's a tricky one, isn't it?
It is. You know, me, myself, it would... Man, that's a tough one. Because you can fish all year long.
Right. And you can only hunt a few months out of the year.
Correct. Correct. And you can be successful during a hunt, and you can fail during a hunt with the limited months available. But I would probably say fishing.
Yeah, you would do fishing all the time?
I think that's a really tough one.
We had a heller experience on the ice this year.
Yeah,
It was cold as shit. Remember all those DNR guys out there?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
We went out to, where was that, Mount Summit?
Yeah, I think it was Mount Summit.
Yeah, I think it was. And we went out to Mount Summit. Now, I mean, we just got probably 6 inches of snow.
Actually the roads were shut down.
Yeah, we were in red. We weren't even allowed to leave. And heck, they even shut down work and wouldn't let anybody go into work. So here Terry and I jump in the truck and we head out to Mount Summit, which is what, about 45 minutes to an hour away, roughly.
Yeah.
And we got there and we're driving around looking for a damn spot to throw up the shanty and, you know, sit down and, you know, try to get on some fish. And we pull up to I guess that probably was what, their beach area maybe?
Yeah.
There was a boat dock. I know that. I remember the boat dock being there.
It was a dock area.
There must have been 40 DNR vehicles, and we stopped one of them fellas, and we're like, hey, what the hell happened? What's going on? And I guess they were doing some water training, and it must have been, it was probably what, 10, 15 below zero.
Yeah, it
was. You could tell the look on this guy's face.
I felt sorry for the rookies that day.
Yeah. You could tell the look on this fellow's face that he was not impressed. But you know what? Every one of those guys got down in the water that day. They got down there. They did their water training. And kudos to Indiana DNR. Those guys do excellent work. They do, I've had good experiences with DNR. I mean, heck, over, you know, where we hunt, I caught some poachers out there and reported it to DNR because that's something, you know, we don't condone. I hate it. I don't want anything to do with it. I reported these guys and ended up, you know, chit-chatting with that DNR officer, and I shot a, you know, a little 8-pointer down at the bottom of about, you know, 2.5 miles off the road, probably, or 2 miles roughly. And it started pouring down rain. And I called this guy up on his phone, and he came down and he unlocked the gate and drove all the way down there and picked that damn deer up, threw it in the bed of the truck, and drove it back up to my truck. That's when you and I met. That was a couple years ago. That's almost 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
And, you know, ever since then, we've done a lot of hunting and fishing together. We do definitely do a lot of squirrel hunting together. That's why I promised the first podcast to him. But let's see, what are you thinking? What drives you to get up, you know, at you know, 4 o'clock in the morning to jump in your truck to go sit by the water or go get in your boat or to go, you know, go to the woods? What drives you?
I just love the outdoors. I love the challenge, whether it's a 150-pound doe, whether it's a spike buck, whether it's 50, you know, 8, 9-inch bluegill. I love the outdoors. I'd rather be in the outdoors any time of the year than going to a bar with topless chicks that are drunk for 4 hours a night.
I don't know about that. Jeez, man. Topless chicks and a bar? I don't know. You got a pretty good woman, though.
I'm not single, though.
Right? Right? So all you guys, just beware. Terry is not single. No, you got a pretty good woman, though. I mean, Leanne, you know, she puts up with your crazy ass. She's got to be pretty good.
Yep, she puts up with me. She hadn't drilled enough holes in the ice around me to make me fall in yet.
Right? See, you've started teaching her how to get out and about and how to hunt, and she actually sticks it out with you, right?
I mean, yeah, she does.
She gets out in the cold. She gets out in the, you know, the heat fishing. She gets out with all them bugs and...
Yep.
But I know one thing she is terrified of. Snakes. God, remember I threw that snake at her? Turned out it was fucking... What was that thing? That was a water moccasin, a little baby water moccasin. Yeah. Well, hell, I picked it up and threw it at her.
If I climb in bed at night and she's asleep, she jumps out of the bed.
Yeah.
I mean, runs.
I don't blame her. I'd be running out of the bed if you climbed in me, too.
She saw an Alabama black snake.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Yeah, and, you know, she definitely sticks with it. I don't know how Cassie sticks with it.
She puts her heart in it.
Yeah, she really does. Hopefully this year we can get her on some deer. I mean, she's had some opportunities, just hasn't nothing that could produce. I mean, and a lot of that, I mean, that's not her fault. I mean, wrong place, wrong time, right place, right time. That's you can do everything in your power to teach somebody how to do it, but until you actually get out and do it, and take some of the knowledge that you've learned from other people and things that they've done and actually start perfecting your own way of doing it, because no two things work the same. What works for you doesn't work for me.
Correct. And she's been on deer. Her biggest thing is getting the movement, the head turning, situation of the bow, the gun, or whatever.
Didn't she say, hey, Terry, deer?
Yeah,
let's hear about that.
So
the reason I'm starting to talk about her, because he was just at the window peeking out.
Probably wanting to see if we're shooting a rabbit right there.
Yeah, I think she probably was. I think she's feeding these things. But anyway, let's hear about that.
Yeah, we were in a V-tree.
What's a V-tree?
It's where two trees grow up, and they kind of look like a V.
Oh, so it splits.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So we can get in them with our climbers. We had the wind right in our favor. We had a trail approximately 20 yards off of us, and I put her facing the trail with my back to it because I was facing a ravine, and I had her facing the bedding area, thinking that that's where the success was going to come from that evening, and it did. And when them three does come out, I think she went in the panic mode and was more interested in letting me know they were there instead of shot placement.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's funny when you're hunting in a blind with somebody, or when you're double standing like that. My philosophy is, if you see it, you shoot it. Don't even tell me you're going to shoot. Let me jump out of my skin. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let me jump out of my skin and let you kill that thing. You know, and that's funny, you know, and that shows her excitement for the, you know, for hunting and for fishing and things of that nature. Cause she gets super excited.
Oh yeah.
And that's awesome. You know, that's something that, that's hard to come by.
Yeah.
You know?
I think she's got the initial rush of seeing a deer under her belt now. So now if one approaches and it's within range and the shot is good, I think she will get it.
Confidence. Come on.
I know it'll happen. Now that she doesn't get all ecstatic and stoked and excited, you know, seeing it.
That's why we do it, though. I mean, I get excited seeing deer.
Yeah,
I don't care if it's season or not season. If I see a deer, I get excited.
Yeah,
you know?
I've heard a lot of people talk about buck fever, and I used to get it when I was younger, but now I get it after the shot. I don't know what it is in me that drives me, but I can. Everything is focused on the kill. My heart rate don't raise.
I'm
going to stealth mode.
My son, he just turned 12, but he he's like that too. I mean, he is steady as a rock when it comes time to shoot. And then afterwards, he's shaking like a leaf, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, I went through a spurt for a while where it was, I was really like, you know, like the buck fever. I was just excited, you know?
Yeah.
Because there was a time where I didn't see a lot of deer in the woods. And then you go from not seeing a lot of deer in the woods to start seeing a lot of deer in the woods. Because you learn things and you learn how to, you know, set yourself up on a trail or set yourself up in the wind or
learn the patterns.
Yeah, you learn patterns, and then you start, you know, you start locking down on how to be successful. And I mean, I, you know, we're pretty successful. My family, we all of us kill deer every year, you know, and that's something that, you know, my dad has taught me growing up. And, you know, I believe it or not, I've learned a lot off my little brother, you know, and he is, he's what's kept me, you know, hunting and fishing, because it's always like, hey, you know, get your ass up, we're going. And I never went through a spurt. Terry's trying to shoot these rabbits out here with his finger. But there was a spurt that I didn't hunt. I took a break from it. I needed that mental break. And then once I came back into it, I started being successful because I got rid of that buck fever. Maybe it's because I grew up, you know, maybe it's because, you know, I went through a marriage and a divorce and it, you know, maybe nothing fazed me anymore. Maybe, you know, there's anything that can change.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. And everybody's different.
Right.
You know, some people are shaking after the shot, before the shot.
Right.
During the shot.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
Always breathe, relax, aim, squeeze.
But, you know, after the shot's done, yeah, I'm stoked. Heart's beating, sweating, you know.
What's your choice? Gun or bow, crossbow? What are you, what do you prefer?
I like archery hunting.
Yep.
I like the challenge of it. You got to get up close and personal.
Right.
And I think it gives...
That's when that stay invisible is going to come in handy this year, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So your archery. Crossbow, bow, what's your preference?
Compound bow. I've been bow hunting since I was probably 15 years old.
Nice.
And then I just started using a compound bow in conjunction with the wife the past couple of years.
Compound bow or crossbow?
Both. Yeah, okay. I just started the last couple of years with a crossbow.
All right. What I know I don't like to name drop crossbows here, but I like your crossbow, so you can go ahead and say the name. What is it?
It's a Raven.
Raven.
Yeah, it's a Raven. And the reason I actually bought one is late season, the deer spooked, if not complete nocturnal.
That thing's dead on at 100 yards.
Even
in a wind. I mean, you're pretty, that arrow, that bolt's traveling pretty damn
fast.
Yes.
You know, you have no leaves on the trees to hide you and whatnot. And getting one with a compound bow where we hunt in January would next impossible.
Right. It really is, because everything's so jittery at that time. You know?
Yes. Everything's spooked. Everything's jittery. You have no cover unless you're ground hunting, and then it's even, you know, sometimes somewhat difficult to ground hunt in January because the ground's so noisy and crunchy, and yeah.
So, the first day you got that crossbow, you sighted it in, right?
Yeah, I sighted it in at the archery shop where I had purchased it.
Yeah. That was I know that archery shop. We're not going to name drop that, but then what? What was your next step?
Well, it was a bad day for the wife. We go to the woods, and I tell her, I said, hey, I want you to sit here in this tree, and then I go on my merry way and ease through the woods, and I'm overlooking this ravine. And, I killed two deer.
Oh, damn.
The evening of me purchasing that thing.
Never really shot it much. Got out, comfortable with it. You sighted it in, got everything squared away. I mean, crossbow, it's like shooting a gun. There's the comfortability is about the same. I mean, to me, I use a crossbow because I've had two shoulder surgeries, but I think shooting a crossbow and a gun are really close to the same. Yeah. The comfort level is there.
It is. The only difference is you don't have to pull a crossbow to your shoulder. You get more accuracy with it being relaxed.
Makes sense because there's not really any recoil.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a little snap on it.
It pulls away from your body. It doesn't push towards your body like
right,
a gun.
Right. And let's see. So anything else that you'd like to add? Anything success that you can maybe something you could say to somebody who's listening that may be new? What would be something you would say, hey, you know, this is something that you really, you know, need to start learning or start paying attention to? What would be one thing that you could say in closing here?
If I could give anybody any good advice, it is an awesome sport. It is challenging. It is not easy. And there's nothing better than putting all natural meat on your table to feed your family with no preservatives, none of the bull crap that you're going to get from a grocery store, and eating what you've worked really hard for.
All right. Hey, Terry, we appreciate your time. We're going to go ahead and shut this podcast down. Hey, tune in for the next episode of Hamilton Outdoors. Y'all have a good day.